Conananian.
You see, the way it works, folks, is if you're not going to change the oil, you should really check it every couple of months. I mean, common sense. Taking care of business
and working overtime. The Car Doctor.
The conversation was also about why is the tire pressure light on? Well, I took the sensors out when I did the tires because they wanted $80 a piece to change sensors, and I'm too cheap for that. Okay.
No!
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
It's a full moon on Monday this week coming. And I kind of knew it on Friday. So I got up, you know, normal time. Actually, I got up a little early. I was full of fire and ready to go. And like, gee, it's Friday. Yay, Friday. Yay, the end of the week. And it was a pretty good week at the shop. We kind of rolled along and got all our cars done. And I said to Danny when I walked in the door, I said, let's like really put our heads down and like, you know, kind of push through it and let's get out of here by 4 o'clock today. I said, let's see if we can do that. It's a Friday. It's going to be a nice Friday into a Saturday. And I said, let's get the weekend off early. You know, sometimes the universe, you know, it's like you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plans. And so the first car that we had to deal with, it was like Subaru day at RNA, as I like to say. We had done four-wheel brakes and four tires on a 13 Subaru, and we finished it up Friday morning. We started it Thursday afternoon. We did all the work. We, you know, stayed a little late, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to go home early on the Friday. And, you know, for Friday morning we came in. We had coffee till about 8 o'clock because we sit and we talk about the week, and we always do that every week. Except on Wednesdays when Carpenter Bob shows up and we have the He-Man Woman Haters Club meeting. And let's get the Subaru out. The Subaru is all done. Danny went out into bay one, put the tires up, hand torque the wheels, get in, turn the key. And there's a distinctive sound an engine makes when you go to start it that you can tell it's healthy. It has that sound of compression to it. And it did. And then all of a sudden it went do-do-do-do-do, like just, it just lost it. And it just started to spin much faster. You could hear the increase in RPM. You know, that's the moment when your throat just kind of closes up and you go, huh? We didn't even have to lift the hood. All we do is put four brakes on the car and four tires and let the car sit inside overnight. Scanned it for codes. I mean, got to start somewhere. We, you know. Like, what happened? Did we lose up? Did what happened? What the heck is going on here? And that isn't exactly how we put it. So we sat there for 5 minutes, kicking it around, talking about it. And I said, all right, there's no faults in this. Every module's online. My ears are true. I heard loss of compression. You know, what if the thing is flooded? And it just gas washed the rings was the first thought I had, because I've seen Hondas do this. I've seen Hondas do this. I've seen Toyotas do this. Well, now I can add Subaru to the list. Because sure enough, Danny held his foot to the floor. And after about 45 seconds of cranking, it started to wheeze and kick. And then all of a sudden, boom, it fired up in a big cloud of black smoke. I am Oz at the tailpipe back of the shop. Good thing we had the door open. And it started. But what would you tell the customer? I mean, what would you accept if that was your car? And you knew the shop, and the shop was competent, and they weren't doing anything wrong. They've given you years and years of service, which this is one of those customers. How do you explain that? How do you accept that as a consumer? How does the shop explain that to you? And it's the news that you just have to give out. It's like, holy cow. So we brought in another Subaru, because I guess we're gluttons for punishment, and it was a simple one. It was a 19 Subaru Forester, I believe. We were trying to do an oil change, a tire rotation, air and cabin filters. It had about 20,000 miles on it, give or take. And the customer needed it back by noon. So, you know, we're trying to get it done by noon. And we're trying to recover from the first Subaru. Like, you know, it took an everything bagel with cream cheese to really kind of settle our stomachs, I could tell. And let's just do something simple. what is it that the universe lines up like that? Again, you know, tell it your plans, watch it laugh. So we looked up air and cabin filters for it. It's supposed to be part number XYZ and part number ABC. You know, it really is. Because the cabin filter listing was wrong. And I said, okay, so, you know, I can accept that, you know, as an aftermarket installer, maybe somebody didn't get the listing crossed over right. So we called up Subaru. Subaru said, yep, we've got that filter in stock. We'll run it right down. And they ran it right down, both of them. And they were both wrong. So the mistake comes from Subaru, right? Because the aftermarket gets their credentials from Subaru in terms of catalog application and lookup. So we ran up to Subaru and got the right filters and ate up more time on the clock. And we missed the noon deadline, unfortunately, but we got the car out by, you know, I think it was ready by 1:32, and the customer picked it up at the end of the day. It wasn't a major inconvenience, for which I was grateful. And then there was the Buick. So I have a Buick Regal that I've been looking at for about 2 weeks now, trying to get it to go into this crank no start condition or a no crank condition. And, you know, one or the other, just to, you know, nothing happens. So I can't duplicate it. And after looking up common pattern failures and talking to the customer and realizing the car is 16 years old and it's his elderly mom's, I sat there and I tried the ignition switch and tried the ignition switch and tried the ignition switch and finally got it to go into a failure where it would crank, not start, and security light came on. And then it would crank. Security light's on and not start. Guess what? Run through codes, what had set. And I think it was the flick of the wrist, because I kind of turned it a little slower, as if an elderly driver was operating it, maybe with a little arthritis and they're not so quick like a youngster like me. And let's put an ignition switch in it. So we order up a GM ignition switch, get the good stuff, right? Older car, they're willing to pay the freight. And, you know, you got to take apart all the plastic covers because everything's brittle, right? Everything's 14 years old now, 16 years old, I'm sorry. And it's just old stuff. And you get all through with the job and everything worked. Everything was perfect. Got the key code the same. It was great. The covers went back on, didn't break anything. And that's when I found out the high beams didn't work. Because of a prior failure the customer reminded me about. And on Monday, I get to take that car apart again and try not to break the plastic covers to diagnose that with what I believe is a faulty ignition switch. I know, you know what? Partly on me, because I should have checked all the switches like I normally do, but my mind was so distracted by that Subaru, I take some of the blame. I guess the point becomes, you can tell when it's a full moon. You can go in with the best of intentions. You can go in with the highest hopes. You can go in with, you know, all the determination in the world. And I always think of that scene in that movie, The Replacements, with Keanu Reeves, where Gene Hackman is asking everybody in the locker room, talk about your fears, and the spider scene. Remember, they're talking about the spiders and, well, let's get past the bugs. And Keanu Reeves says, quicksand. Because you make one play and it goes bad, and you make a second play and it goes bad, and you make a third play, and it's just like being in quicksand. And that's what yesterday was like. Yesterday was like quicksand. It doesn't matter what you did. Everything went wrong, even with the best of intentions. And it's one of the hardest things to fight your way out of in a repair shop. You guys want to know what goes on in the shop and the emotions attached to it? Know that it's just one of the hardest things to overcome. And that's what makes auto repair beyond difficult, because everybody's got perfection expectations and it doesn't happen even with the best intentions, which is one of the reasons I've always said to any of the guys I've hired, you know, no screwing around. Don't touch anything you're not supposed to touch. Do what you're supposed to do. And, you want to horse around, we'll horse around at the end of the day and play practical jokes on each other, whatever floats your boat. But when you're there to work, and because it's just tough enough just trying to do the job day to day. And that's just a day in the life of. I knew it was going to be a full moon Monday. I can't wait to see what Monday turns out like. I hope it's better than Friday. 855-560-9900. By the way, on a good note, this is the day, this is the weekend we're giving away our mid-engine Corvette book. Gorgeous book. We got a picture of it up on Facebook, all about the mid-engine Corvette, brand new book. Just came out in the press, just came out to press, I think in March. So it's just barely 4 weeks old. We're going to give away a copy either this hour or next hour. It's a decision of the judge. Mr. Tom Ray is final. So tell John.
Why do I always have to be the bad guy?
Well, you're not the bad guy. You're the good guy.
Well,
so
I try.
Tell somebody. Somebody should tell Tom that they like his haircut.
Hey, it's easy to maintain.
And in the midst of this, you know, and I should tell you this, in the midst of this, right, of the Subaru no crank, just as we're sitting there cranking the car, and Tom knew I was kind of like confused. Tom calls me up. Tom, tell the listeners your story. You want to do it when we come back? You want to do it now?
Oh, I can do it now. I called up and you were in a mood, and you actually, while this had a no crank condition, you had an old crank condition,
right?
And I told you to go eat a Snickers.
well, you know what happened was Tom called me up to talk to me about, he was at Polytechnic Rensselaer Institute.
Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. I'm sorry, yep. And he's telling me the story about, and I'm half listening to Danny crank this car, and we're trying to think about what's wrong. And I picked up the phone. I always would, and he's telling me about how we have some fans up there at Rensselaer, and
yes.
They listen to the show, and they were all excited to meet Tom, and
it was great. I was with this guy who was associated with the radio station, and I mentioned that I work with this car show on the weekend. He goes, "Oh, which one?" I said, "Ron and Annie, the car doctor." I love that guy.
Oh, good Lord.
Unbelievable where you meet these people.
Yeah, it's just, you know what? The car doctor nation is everywhere, brother. 855-560-9900. The car doctor and Tom, we're coming back right after this. Don't go away.
What's more fun than listening to Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor and getting that car fixed right? 855-560-9900. Give Ron a call. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Al in Nebraska, 05 Ranger, and some fault codes. Al, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Well, tell me what you think's the next best step for me to do.
Well, can you give me a little more information? What engine is in this and, you know, how many miles and that kind of thing?
It's a 3-liter V6.
Okay.
The engine has about 100,000 on it.
Jasper.
It's a Jasper.
Okay. All right.
And it's got P300, 304, 305, and 316.
Okay. So 300 is...
Check the power balance.
Well, 300 is random misfire. 316 means that it's detecting misfire during startup. So the ones you want to focus on are 304 and 305. All right.
Yeah.
You want to identify those two cylinders. Have you pulled plugs and just happened to look at plugs and just kind of go through basics? Do the plugs look like they're firing? You know, does it look like... go ahead.
Let me give you what the technician at the dealership did.
Okay.
He checked the power balance and found 4 and 5 slightly missing. Swapped the plug wires with companions on the coil. The miss was still present.
Right.
So it did a relative compression, and number 5 shows 5% less than all others. So he did a manual compression test on 5 and got 120 PSI. So he did number 6 and got 165. Then he did a leak down on 5 and found a leak at the exhaust valve.
Okay.
And they're recommending to replace the long block. And okay. I'm hoping there's a less pricey alternative.
No. Well, you know, would you go through and just do heads at this point? I mean, that's the only other alternative, take it apart and just replace heads or just replace the damaged pieces. But, you know, what's the plans for the longevity of the truck? How long do you plan to keep it?
I love the truck.
Well, stick an engine in it. You know, it's...
Okay, one other...
But I would do this. I would take it apart and see what failed. Is it, you know, I would be curious to see what failed in terms of, was it something the way you maintained it or didn't maintain? Was it something the way Jasper assembled it, even though it was 100,000 miles ago? You know, what would they see if they took it apart? I'd be curious. And, you know, it just seems like at 100,000 miles, it's the thing's just getting settled in and broken in. I'll ask the obvious questions. You were good on maintenance, oil changes, fuel system cleaning, et cetera?
Oil changes, yes. Fuel system cleaning, no.
I'd be curious to see what the valves look like then. Heavy carbon deposits, do we have a problem with the fuel in your area? For that matter, could we take a bore scope and maybe look down the intake or go up through the spark plug hole and look at the valve in that cylinder? Would we see heavy carbon deposits on the off chance that it might help? Would carbon cleaning help restore compression in that cylinder? That would be my only low-cost alternative.
Yeah, one of the guys did the thing where they do all kinds of stuff to clean the injectors.
Right.
And that seemed to help for a day or two. This was a couple weeks ago.
Does this run rough, Al, when you're driving it? I mean,
it does run rough at idle, but if you speed it up or put a load on it, it smooths out.
Okay. You know, you may want to consider, when you say he did stuff like carbon cleaning, what kind of stuff did he do?
He did one of those things where they put the liquid in different places in the fuel system, and then he put a jug of some kind of fuel cleaner in the gas tank.
Okay. Did he actually hook something up to the fuel rail and let it spray through the injectors?
Yeah.
He did. Okay.
Yeah, he did that.
See if anybody's got access to a bore scope. A bore scope gives you, it's like a plumber's bore scope, except it's for mechanics, and it'll give you the ability to look up the intake or look up through the spark plug hole just to look inside the cylinder. I mean, if you got to take it apart and swing an engine, you have to. There's no choice. But that would be the only cheaper alternative I could think of, short of, you know, pulling the heads and just doing heads on the truck, which if you're planning to keep it, I don't know that I would do that. I would probably do the whole thing and get it over with.
Yeah. One other thing before I forget.
Sure.
Well, continuing to run it as it is with these codes happening, misfires, damaged my catalytic converter.
Yes. You ever go to a bad restaurant to eat, Al?
Not more than once.
Right, that's right. Because why? It gave you indigestion. So you have to think that, realize that that misfire is causing indigestion to the catalytic converters because they're being forced to swallow an incomplete combustible mixture, and they're trying to resurrect it and straighten it out. So, no good. Stop driving it. Swing an engine. Fix the engine. Whatever you got to do. And promote the life of the cats, and you'll get more miles out of them. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. You know I'm always late coming back from the break when we're playing this, Tom. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, at your service. By the way, in the news, Tom's got me disco dancing here in the studio.
And it's a sight you don't want to see.
Yeah, let me tell you. Saturday Night Fever, baby. 750,000 GM trucks and SUVs are now under investigation for potentially faulty airbags. This came out April 14th this year. You know, this airbag thing just doesn't seem to go away. The latest recall, NHTSA put out a report last week on the investigation, which stated the issue was most likely related to a malfunction indicator. According to the report, affected vehicles could include the problem. Well, they wrote the article. They wrote the report wrong. But the affected vehicles could be both 20 and 21 Chevy Silverado, Suburbans, Tahoes, GMC Sierras, Yukons, Cadillac Escalades, XT4s, CT4s, and CTSs. Or, I'm sorry, CT5s. I got that right. 750,000 vehicles, bad airbags. And this is the company that's going to make an electric car. Boy, you just want to trust that 100%, don't you? By the way, anybody see the thing in the news? I don't have it in front of me, but there was unfortunately a fatality with a Tesla down in Texas. I think it was Dallas or Austin, where two drivers, nobody was at the wheel, and they were trying out the self-driving portion of the vehicle. And unfortunately, the car, in theory, was not equipped with self-driving capability. And they went off-road at a high rate of speed, and they were killed in a car crash, sadly. But, you know, it's, you know, the problem is, and I guess this is my issue, you know, the electric car self-driving, you know, self-steering thing, it can't be oops. You know, we can't have any oops. It's like the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. There was an oops 2 weeks ago, and now they're saying where there's more vaccine than people, in a lot of cases across the board. You know what? These electric cars are going to have to be perfect. There can't be a tolerance for we missed one or two or three. They've all got to work, and it's got to be managed a whole lot better, I think, than what they're doing. So, but just be aware, if you're driving a late model GM, 3/4 million trucks, you want to get out to NHTSA, NHTSA.gov, and just plug in your 17-digit VIN, which you can find in the bottom left corner of the windshield or on your vehicle registration or title. Get out to NHTSA.gov, and you'll look for the tab that says recalls, and you can plug in your VIN and see if your vehicle is for anything, any year, make, model, whatever. If it's sold in a continental or in the United States, you can check for and see, do you have that vehicle? Is that vehicle under any kind of recall? So just, you know, NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Authority, .gov. Let's go over to Tom in Connecticut, 15 Camry, and some, geez, it's compression day on the Car Doctor. Nobody has any. So, Tom, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
First, Ron, thank you. And listen, I've listened to your show over the years, and I've learned quite a bit.
Thank you.
And you really keep me updated.
Thank you, sir.
In what's happening in the automotive field.
Thank you.
This is a 2015 Camry. It's a 3.5 V6 double overhead cam, and it has the VVTi engine in it, so
right.
It's pretty sophisticated,
yep,
as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
As I was saying, it's never had any problems whatsoever. I've never seen a light on the car, never burned any oil, and it is meticulously maintained. Earlier this week, a misfire occurred. It set the check engine light. I put a diagnostic tool on it, and I've got three codes, a PO300, a PO301, and a PO305. So I had a misfire. I just thought, because the car was so reliable, that it might have been a spark plug or a coil, ignition coil. And I got to that point, and those were fine. And then I performed the next test, which was a compression test, and cylinder number 5 actually read 0. And all the other ones were perfect in the 180, 185 range. So they seemed to be okay. And I wound up doing a leak down test, and it showed me that the intake valve had either blown or something happened where it's just not registering.
It was you're hearing air, you're feeling or hearing air coming out the intake port, coming up the intake,
coming out the plenum,
right?
And all the time, I put compressed air in. I go turn the crankshaft, go through all the cycles, and it never lets up. When I block the plenum, just to verify, no air comes out the exhaust and no air comes out the oil filler cap.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm at this point where I'm, my next step, obviously, is to take the head off. And really, that's beyond my abilities. But what I was wondering is, what could cause something like this?
You know, it's odd, especially at less than 60,000 miles. You know, you wonder if the seat fell out of the head, you know, because the valve, it's an aluminum head, so the valve is hardened and it has to push against a hardened seat, like a door sill, all right, where you would step on it with your foot. And you wonder if the seat is loose in the head and it's causing the problem. You know, did you take the upper intake plenum off?
Yes.
When you did your compression test?
Yes, I did.
I'd be curious if you if you wanted to really see, is it that cylinder, if you took the plenum back off and hand cranked the engine, do you see the valve open and close? Does it have correct cam action in that sense? I mean, I'm going to say it probably does, but I would just be, why? What went bad? And what I'm thinking about is it possible there's something there, a carbon chip or chunk that's stuck, but you would think it would wash off when it, as you operated the vehicle, like it's if something's wedged in there, you would think it would eventually fall into the cylinder in a sense. And I'm over dramatizing this because it happens so fast, the speeds inside the cylinder. So
what about, I know exhaust valves are under a lot of heat and intake valves less so. What about the valve fracturing?
But why only one? And if that's the case, then where did the metal fragments go? Here's another example of if someone has access to a bore scope. If you could get a bore scope down in this cylinder, if you pulled the plenum off and looked at the back of the valve, which cylinder was it?
It was 5. It's on the back bank end cylinder. It's
right.
The 135.
135. So, you could get a clear shot of it with the plenum off just to look to see, but at that point, does it matter? If you've legitimately lost compression and if you don't see anything even with a bore scope, your next step is you've got to pull the head. But 0 is a heck of a loss. 0 is a valve is stuck open or a valve has fractured or the seat is out of the head. And
I'm sorry, Ron.
Go ahead.
Can the variable valve timing, can that keep a valve open if it malfunctions?
Why only one cylinder?
I agree. Okay.
If you told me that bank had issues, then maybe the sprocket jumped the tooth or was stuck in an advanced or retarded position and it was affecting timing. Although I don't know, you'd have 0 compression, you'd still have compression. A pump's a pump. For you to have 0 compression, and you did it right. You said you leak tested it.
Yes.
To have 0 compression, listen, if you're curious, tomorrow it's going to rain in the Northeast. Take the intake plenum back off and put air in the cylinder and pour a little fluid in there. You should see bubbles coming out of the intake when the valve's closed. At least you'll know your test is right.
Right. Okay. Do you mind if I just ask one or two more questions?
I'll tell you what. Let me pull over, take a pause, and when we come back, we'll finish up and go from there. Stand by, Tom. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor. Let's get back to Tom in Connecticut. Tom, quickly, sir, what's your last two questions?
Just the last thing, Ron. When I bring the head to the machine shop, any thoughts about what to ask the machinist?
Well, explain the whole scenario the way you explained it to me, and you were great in explaining it. And, what does he say? It's just really that simple. Now, the fact that this only has 54,000 miles on it, I would trust his judgment if he wants to do, sometimes somebody brings you a head, it's going to be a complete reconfiguration, a complete rebuild, etc. But less than 60,000 miles, it's going to be, look at and decide what needs to be done. Maybe it doesn't need a complete overhaul. Maybe it's just a component repair. But, keep in mind that maybe because you're pulling off the back head, maybe you want to take him the front head and have them look at both, because if it is a loose valve seat, who's to say the front doesn't go through it shortly, too? You want them all checked and looked at and verified.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Tom. You be well.
I enjoy the show again.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. Let's go over to Van in Maine, 07 Mini Cooper, and see what's going on here. Hi, how can I help?
Yes. Hello, Ron.
Yes, sir.
First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you. How can I help?
Yes. I have a weird behavior on the clock on this Mini Cooper that I have. And the clock is tied in with my average speed and miles per gallon. And what's happening is that several times, not every time I start the car up, but when I start the car up, my clock for some reason resets to like dashes, like meaning that I have to, like as if you unplug the battery and you plug it back in, you have to set the clock. And so thing is, I'm having to set it several times.
Okay.
And I looked in the forum, and somebody mentioned something about a weak battery. And I find that hard to believe because my car starts up and cranks really well. So I don't understand what's going on, why my clock is misbehaving and resetting itself.
Well, you know, it's a simple thing of, is it losing power? Is it losing ground? Or is it a defective clock? Right? I mean, it's really only one of three possibilities. All right? Now, the clock on that vehicle does have an input that comes off of the instrument cluster, and we've got to consider that into the mix. But I think the instrument cluster tie-in, if I remember correctly, is it's just supplying data to the instrument cluster for reasons of, you know, it wants to be involved in the calculation of time to get somewhere, et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of the timekeeper for the system.
Okay.
So I would go find the ground. The ground for that is, I believe, under the back seat, all right? And go find the actual ground itself. Verify that the ground is there. You probably want to break out a wiring diagram and just verify. If I remember right, the clock is on its own fuse in the fuse holder behind the left wheelhouse or the left kick panel, all right? I think it's fuse 3 or 4. F3 or F4, I think it's 3. Small fuse, okay. It's only 5 amps, so there's not a lot on that circuit. And, you know, take a look at the fuse. Does the fuse have any deterioration? I'm not saying it's a bad fuse in that it's got an intermittent to it, but I've seen cases of certain electrical components not working 100% where the fuse has a burn mark on the blades or corrosion on the blades, and it'll affect the ability for it to power the circuit. So, right. It could, you know, Ford had a problem with fuel pumps on their trucks where the trucks were going through, everybody was putting fuel pumps in them, and that wasn't the case. F21 in the underhood fuse block had to be moved. They gave you the ability to create their own fuse box or a separate fuse in the box and replace the fuse with a different style or a newer style, higher amperage fuse. So let's verify the fuse. Let's verify ground. And then if you want, we can call me back next week. We can talk about ways to make sure it's getting to it at the clock. And then after that, it's just got to be a clock. That's all that you really have there, Van. There's not much else. So I look forward to the next conversation, brother. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Thanks for sticking with me this hour. We kind of had some ups and downs, and we were all over the place on the automotive map. Hey, Tom, listen, I know what I want to do next. You ready?
Oh, do we really have to tell the people?
Yeah. Can you get me a new Corvette to drive? I think I should be a test driver. So I'm reading, and here's why.
I think that'd be great.
Here's why. I'm reading from our book that we're going to give away, the Corvette Stingray, the Mid-Engine Revolution, courtesy of Motor Books. And we'll have to give it away next hour if somebody asks for it. Let's make it to the first person that asks for it, Tom. The article, I'm on page 197. They're talking about the design, and it's got a removable roof. All right, the roof comes off this, so because naturally you got to have a convertible, but it's designed that you can have a removable roof. The roof stores in the trunk along with your two golf bags. So
really?
Yeah, so it's actually the trunk is actually designed around storing two golf bags. I mean, that was the whole, and they make a point of saying the car has more utility in it than anything else that's comparable in the segment. Now,
wow,
this is a $100,000 car. I think it's 60 to 70, but I've seen stories where they're $100,000. Matter of fact, I saw one in a parking lot this morning. It is pretty hot. It's a pretty neat car. Of course, I look at it and I go, gee, who's going to fix it? I can tell you who's going to fix it. Good mechanics, because I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. Great segue, huh? See ya. We'll be back soon.